I'd like to thank all participants for holding. All lines will be on listen only until the question and answer portion of today's conference. I'd also like to inform participants today's call is being recorded. If you have objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'm now turning the call over to John Meehan. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Brian, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Tivoli Americas Pipeline Building call for today. My name is John Meehan, and I am the Tivoli Systems E-Sales Leader for the Americas. By now, you should have the presentation material that we'll be referencing during today's call. If you don't have it, you can access it directly via the link that was included in your calendar invite for this call. I believe some people, business partners, I've heard we had a little bit of a confusion on the link that went to external outside of IBM. So if you're experiencing difficulty in getting the material, please send a note or at the same time to Sarah Molnar. Her internet address is smolnar@us.ibm.com, and Sarah can help you get the presentation material. Our topic this morning, IT cost management with Tivoli Compliance Manager for ZOS, fits in quite well with the theme for the group of Tivoli cost reduction plays that Joel Perez and Doug Brown have put together. Clearly, in today's environment, organizations are feeling the pressure of economic uncertainty. Now more than ever, organizations are being called upon to do more with less. They need to be able to cut costs and reduce risks, accelerate the integration of mergers and acquisitions, and they need to simply be smarter about getting value from their investments in information, technology, and other infrastructure. Tivoli Compliance Manager provides a very strong value proposition to help customers with these types of challenges. The purpose of today's call is to provide you with the information that you need to feel comfortable in making calls to develop opportunities around TLCM. To help me with this, I have called upon a colleague who I consider to be a subject matter expert in IT financial management. In over 28 years at IBM, Sig Puchez has worked in sales management, product management, strategy, and software development. However, during all those years, he has consistently been involved in IT financial management in one way or another since the mid 1970s. So he brings a wealth of experience and information to this topic. He's a senior sales specialist on the SystemZ software SMPO team, and he's a resource that you can call upon with for assistance with this topic. Sig's name, as well as mine, and our telephone numbers and contact information is on the first page of the presentation material. So feel free to reach out to both of us for assistance with this. So at this point, I'm going to turn things over to Sig. Sig, are you there?
Yep, I'm there. Thank you. My phone just went off and I was trying to mute it. Good morning, everyone, and I'm really excited to be here this morning. Thank you, John, for the introduction. I always look forward to talking with our sales force about the topic of financial management, and I think a topic today, especially in these trying troubled times, is a perfect thing to have a dialogue with for your customers that have System Z. So I really do appreciate the opportunity. I think, John, we're going to defer questions to the end. Is that right? The line's muted until
yes,
the end?
Yes, Sig. The line is muted for the attendees, so we'll have to take questions at the end of the presentation.
Okay. So I'm looking forward to a stimulating dialogue. If we can move to chart number two, our objective today is to equip you with enough information to make those initial calls with the customers, have credible discussions with the customers, and if you have valid Tivoli License Compliance Manager for ZOS opportunities, provide you with a list of resources and people to call to engage in these situations. The overview of the agenda today is to discuss a bit of the business problem that we're helping the customer solve, how we solve it, talk about a customer experience, try and give you an idea of the pains and the cures that we have, who the target customers to call on, what the sales process looks like, and then the call to action and resources. If we can move to chart number three, why this is such a contemporary topic is you know, we've been taught there are really three challenges all CIOs that we work with or IT organizations that we work with have. One is either controlling costs or reducing costs. Number two is to keep the organization out of trouble from a compliance or a legal perspective. And number three is generating new revenue through innovation. And the product that we're going to be talking about in this software asset management today is really focused on two of those topics, in its area of cost reduction and keeping the companies out of legal problems or out of court or out of seeing all of a sudden large unexpected costs. Why this is a germane topic is, as this chart points out, that number one, hardware costs are going down. Those of us in our hardware, of our hardware brethren are seeing that hardware costs are kind of flat, but software costs are rising and labor costs are rising. And so the ability to put in place an automated solution to software asset management will help control the labor costs and help the customer really optimize their software investment and control those software costs. As you see, Gartner is very bullish on this. Putting in place a strong asset management program can help in the initial years reduce costs in the realm of 30%, and then on a continuing basis, looking at a 5 to 10% cost savings over the next 5 years. So this isn't one of those areas where you get a one-time shot in the arm from a savings perspective. It really is a continuous process, as most of the IT service management disciplines are. So the first area is the area of trying to drive down costs of labor and drive down the cost of software and make better software investments. If we move to chart number four, this is the one that I talked about of keeping customers out of trouble. I mean, this is with the advent of Sarbanes-Oxley, with the sensitivity in the industry on what we've seen in the financial market with collapse, everybody is really looking at making sure that they're compliant with contracts. It was interesting. I met with a customer last week on an on-site visit, and the customer says, "I really need a technology like this because, unfortunately, by and large, I tend to buy more than I really need because I want to stay out of trouble." And it's difficult to manage this environment with some of the dynamics that are going on. So, the second problem area we're trying to address is really the one around compliance and making sure customers have the right fit of software to the what they're entitled to. If we go to chart number five, customers seem to relate to this chart really well. Why this is so hard is, the buying of software is really all over the place, and we'll see. And with some large customers, they think they have a good handle in the System Z area, but the reality is when we go in there with discussions with them and proof of concepts, we really find that even though they talk a lot about having this under control, without having a central area to look at and continuously keep up to date in an automated fashion, whatever they do really runs out of date very quickly. And that's driven by the business change that's going on within the organization, also with the complexities of the license metrics. I mean, IBM, we have a lot of different models for System Z. Some of them are processor value unit based, some of them are concurrent user based, and our competitors have a lot of different terms and conditions. And so keeping up with that and relating to what's out there and how it's being used and how it matches those metrics is a tough job. The other thing is in different organizations, people buy software from different parts of the organization. You might have good control by the technical services organization on the operating system and utilities area, but you might find the database people managing their software in a different manner, and the application development people may be managing their software in a different area. So not having it centralized and having siloed decisions on procuring things gets us into trouble. The other thing, and this is the second last point, no clear knowledge of what's installed, but more importantly, how much it's being used is as we look at the cost savings areas and cost avoidance areas, one of the key attributes, because you might be deployed from a within your contract rights, but you might have a lot of software out there that it's installed, but it's really shelfware, or it could be run on smaller processors, and that'll open up areas of cost-saving opportunities. And as we know overall about software or the disciplines of service management in general, the asset management area is one that's really maturing now, very in the forefront, with more customers looking at running IT more like the other parts of the business with good management disciplines. So that's why it's so hard. If we go to chart number six, our solution, and you know, you see a quote there from the customer. We'll see a bit more from Zurich, but with Tivoli, you know, with this product specifically, they were able to align their software usage with end users' needs and have a significant reduction in costs. You know, the product is Tivoli License Compliance Manager for ZOS. One of the great things about this software is we really don't have any competitors. IBM has patents in this area and is an exclusive offering. It goes out there and discovers the inventory. It's catalog-based, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, this is not just for IBM software or subcapacity software from IBM. It's from an extensive list of ISV software. The catalog has over 55,000 entries of products out there. It's not just monitoring what's deployed, but how it's being used and has some good trending information for people to plan with. It puts the customer in a proactive rather than reactive mode. You know, we probably, from our perspective, when we're negotiating with customers, them having a knowledge, a true knowledge base of what's being used, you know, keeps us light on our feet, and hopefully our competitors even in a more compromising position. Reports, you know, in a virtualized environment across LPARs, so it can integrate with subcapacity reporting, but you can tell what's being used on the different systems and integrates that together. And as the last point says, you know, we are the only game in town here. If we look at number seven, and this is a good educational chart, but this is what it means to do a full life cycle of if you will, software asset management. You know, the first question to answer is, what software do I have? And you see we have, you know, a host and distributed solution here. Are the assets being used? And that's, usually a key differentiator. And we have distributed and host assets there. The matching against the license entitlements, that's awfully tough, and it's nice to have an automated capability to do that, and TLCMZ can do that. And then finally, we actually integrate in with the overall contractual area, because when we look at software asset management and when the industry looks at software asset management, ultimately all four of these areas have to be addressed, but the contract and financial terms, you know, we're looking for the customers hopefully to use Tivoli Asset Management for IT. We can help ease the implementation of this contract management into that system by populating the software that's out there and then mapping your contract terms and financial terms to it. So we have a full answer for what the industry says you need to do effective software asset management. We move to chart number eight. This is probably, if there is one cheat sheet to take with you, or if you want to have a discussion with a customer about it, this is the one visual that really is very powerful in bringing the whole message together. This is kind of the four scenarios that you have that License Compliance Manager helps you answer and make sure you're out of trouble. And, you know, the best situation for the customer is at the upper right-hand quadrant. You know, I have the software, I'm actively using the software, and I'm contracted for the software under the entitlement levels that map back to my use. So that's where you'd like to be. Seldom is it the customers are ever really there. Even in that scenario, if I take a look at how I'm using it, I might find some ability to move it to smaller systems or to single LPARs if the licensing terms allow that to save money. But that's where everyone wants to be. If I look to the upper left-hand corner, you know, I have it and I use it and I'm not contracted for it, and that, you know, that red flag is really a troublesome situation. That's that problem that we were talking about. The CIO wants is being asked to keep the customer or keep the corporation out of trouble from a contractual perspective. This is in many cases when I get called in to talk to customers, it's been because some vendor has pulled an audit and they find this kind of situation. So I will tell you, this is a much better or more comfortable conversation to have about software asset management with customers before they failed an audit. In a lot of cases, that's a compelling reason that customers end up coming to us and want to look for a solution. The next one is where I have the product, bottom lower left-hand quadrant. I don't have the product. I don't use it, and I'm contracted for it. Under that situation, that's one of those things that you either say, why did we invest for it, or maybe we invested for it so long ago and we lost it and we don't need it anymore and I can go and discontinue maintenance on it. And then the lower right-hand corner is kind of similar to that. I have it. It's out there deployed, but I don't use it and I'm contracted for it, and it's the same thing. If these are really unnecessary licenses, I ought to get discontinue maintenance and use some of those dollars to buy some software I really can use. So that's a very important chart to have the entertain the discussion with your customer. This number nine, if we transition to that, you know, this is just kind of gives you an idea of what the product's doing for you, what products are installed by different vendors, products, titles, features, modules. Very powerful discovery that goes on there. It says what's it's installed in the usage, and it's using live data and live snapshots of everything that gets invoked. It goes across the entire sysplexes and across locations, so gives you a complete picture. It gives you an idea who's using those. So if it's being used, who are the people invoking it? So we can track that back to the users and the jobs that are using that technology and that software. Gives you extensive reporting on weekly, daily, monthly periods. And it also gives you some trending information that can give you an idea of where you can have some cost savings and consolidating. You know, if you have a few number of people that are using it and you have the software installed in a number of systems, you can go and put it in a single system and have save some dollars. We've helped a lot of people in that situation, for example, that are SaaS users, which tends to have a very expensive pricing model. Chart number nine talks about the cost reduction area. This one and the next one are a bit redundant, but I thought these having a bit more information to jog your memory might be helpful. But you know, you get this information, and when the customer goes into contract negotiations, they have a full use of information of how they're using the products. You can drop products that aren't being used anymore. You can consolidate a number of products, just as a bit of a commercial for the people that haven't heard of the portfolio review analysis work that the SMPO does. That's work that we go out and we'll actually inspect all of the software involved in a company Z environment and then make recommendations for IBM replacements. That is a special version of this product that we actually use in those studies, so the customer can do some of that work themselves to help on those consolidations. I talked about this consolidating number of machines, you know, verifying that you're in compliance terms. That's an important factor with the product. And again, you really need to be able to, that usage differentiator is a key point when you talk with the customers, because as I talk about the selling cycle, some customers will say they have a handle on this because they control what's installed out there, but usage is very, very key for cost savings. Chart number 11 is another way of saying that. You know, this is saying the first point there is the compliance risk reduction. That's, you know, keeping the company out of trouble, that, you know, based on my contract and my entitlement terms, I'm not overusing software, using software that I don't have the right to use. The cost management, I've hit most of these points before, but, you know, it's the whole idea of having the right software in the right place and using it the right way to optimize my software investment. And if over time my usage goes down and I don't need as much or I don't need that software, I can eliminate that software and use those dollars to buy more current day software that I need, because, you know, and that's what the opportunity creation is, you know, IT's under a lot of pressure. They never have a lot of dollars, so why should they be wasting dollars on software they don't need when they can apply it to software they do need? Chart number 12 is a bit of a case study. This is Farmer Zurich Insurance. You know, they were doing this manually. The costs were going up, as we know, with a lot of Z software, especially from ISVs that don't take advantage of the Z technology dividend factor on MSUs like we do. You know, every time they do an upgrade, they're seeing a linear increase in their licensing, and, you know, they really don't know, since they don't have a clear picture of what's being used, what areas they can discontinue. So that was the situation that Farmers was in. You know, like a lot of our Z customers, Bob Becker is pretty active in talking to our customers for us. But you can see the quote there. You know, they were able to eliminate several millions of dollars of unnecessary expense in just 18 months. If we go to chart number 13, this says, you know, what kind of company should you call on? And, you know, the bottom line is any company that has a reasonable size Z installation, you ought to be talking to it. You know, catalysts there are when new agreements are coming up, whether it's with IBM or our competitors. This is a great product to talk about to make sure that we have the right entitlements. You know, the large ISV presence, we can get a handle on, or the customer can get a handle on what they have from the ISVs and possibly what we can replace. International businesses, mergers and demergers are very important. I'll tell you, there's a lot of situations where I've been invited to come in that, you know, a company is splitting up, and, you know, who should own what software, and who, you know, without usage information, they can't get a clear picture of that. Mergers, you know, how much is being used in those organizations, how much of it's overlapping, and how much can we save across those organizations. There's a pretty large bank right now that's looking at TLCMZ just for this benefit alone. Insourcing or outsourcing, this product is used by a lot of outsourcers. IBM SO, it is a standard. We actually do a due diligence using this product before we do an outsourcing contract to make sure we really do understand the licensing exposure that we have in those deals. And similarly, there's been a couple of situations where IBM had been outsourced that was coming back in-house, and the customers wanted to have a good handle on this, and they invited us in to talk to them about it. Cost savings initiatives is a key catalyst. Headcount reductions, you know, I hate to use headcount reductions, but, you know, this work has got to go on, and if they want to do it more effectively, having an automated method to do that is very helpful. The, you know, upcoming audit, I will tell you, a lot of people that have been burned in the past, like on the distributed side, will this will be a catalyst to make sure they have it on the mainframe side and vice versa. But a lot more people are doing a lot more self-auditing in the IT area. Contract negotiations, a recommitment to Z and upgrades to Z, a new CIO to make sure, you know, have this discussion with him to make sure his budget is right. So I know that's an exhaustive list, but quite frankly, this is a key conversation to have at the executive level or in the procurement contracting area. I think sometimes, and I'll talk about this in a couple of charts on sales cycle, if we don't get out to the executive level and out to the procurement area, many times the IT people either will find, will say they have this under control, or will say that they don't need a tool because they have a spreadsheet and they don't want to see the exposure. So I think this is a good, like all of financial management, a good conversation with at the executive level, and for the topic of license compliance, either the audit department or the procurement department would be good people to talk about this, because especially procurement, they're not aware of this kind of capability, and once you make them aware of it, I think they'll be a very good sponsor for us. Which takes us really to chart number 14. You know, the target here is the CFO, the controller auditing folks, as opposed to the traditional IT people. The executive people are also key targets, and then, the people who do contract negotiations. The IT people in general are going to end up wanting to see it, analyze it, but typically aren't the major sponsors. And there's your selling script off to the left. I won't go through all of the points, but, the questions about, are you compliant? Are you over-licensed? Do you know if you're over-licensed? Have you been audited, or will you soon be audited? And can you answer that compliance question? And then, the persuade step is, IBM has an exclusive solution here, not just for IBM software, but for all ISV software, and we can tie it to usage, so you get that complete view of it. And how do we take the next step in this area if you don't have something like that? If we move to chart 15, this happily is an area where we can use some information for ROI justification. The biggest issue is the bullet I've alluded to a couple of times in this presentation, but a lot of times, I was in Little Rock not more than 30 days ago, and we were having this conversation, and the guy that ran the data center, well, I don't need something like this. I got a spreadsheet to do it on. The distributed guys are the guys that need this because they're out of control. But we found it time and time again in customers. We've been able to validate that spreadsheet of theirs, although it might be true to some degree with inventory, the usage, they have no information on the usage mapping to find cost savings, and in most cases we find the spreadsheet, in fact, is really out of date. If we can get over that inhibitor, a face-to-face discussion with the people to review the current process they have, what their pains and costs are, who are the biggest vendors that are hurting them, and then really an overview of the IBM solution and the intelligence and the insight that we can provide with this solution. We can do a pro forma ROI. I have a spreadsheet that I use that we can lay out 3 or 4 year savings. Bruce Hawkinson out of Chicago has an excellent one as well, but if we can get a handle on what their current costs are, what their past history growth rates were, and what we think in the future, we can, use some assumptions, industry assumptions, and then get them to agree with some of those assumptions. And if they want us to lower them because we're being too aggressive, or heighten them because we're being too conservative, we can display that ROI to them. We can do reference calls as well. We have a number of very, very strong customers that are willing to talk to customers. And then, we can do a limited POC with the product. The only thing I would caution you about with the POC is to get meaningful results, and we usually deploy this just in a subset of the customer's environment. But that POC is going to run at a minimum of 45 to 60 days, so it's going to be very, very, very difficult to get any kind of business in a quarterly business cycle. So that I would just caution you about that on the PO, volunteering a POC at the beginning, as opposed to, having that discussion with a customer about benefits and maybe even doing pro forma ROIs and trying to sell it that way without a POC. But if we get pressed, we can do that. Chart number 16 is really the call of action, you know, really contact the people in procurement, internal audit, and technical services to have this discussion. Use some of the key things in this presentation in that. You'll see there is a sales play with us, you know, with some scripting information. If we get an opportunity, putting in that tactic code would be appreciated by the marketing people. And if there is a level of valid opportunity, you have myself as a resource, and from a technical pre-sales perspective, we have Barry Sullivan. He's excellent, or I should say Barry Siegel. He's excellent. He's got years of experience in this as well, much more in-depth technically than me, but we would both love to help, and, you know, good luck and good selling. And then, you know, the next page, chart number 17 is there, just with some additional resource information. So with that, I'd like to turn it back to John, and I think we're ready to for some questions and answers.
Okay, Sig, thank you. Thank you. That was great. I think gave us a great overview, and hopefully really for those of, I know many people are on the call are relatively new to selling in Z, and kind of a side benefit of a sales play such as this one is it's an excellent way to as an entree into to selling to customers on the Z platform, because of the nature of what you're talking about, it can provide some familiarity, and it can take direction in a lot of ways. Operator Brian, could you please open it up now for questions and from the audience?
Sure. At this time, if anyone would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be announced prior to asking your question. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. I'm showing no questions.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Okay, folks, the contact information is there, and by all means, feel free to reach out to Sig and myself as you go out there and prospect for opportunities in this and questions that develop as a result of that. Feel free to call on us. We're here to help you. In the weeks to come, a lot of the sales plays you're going to be seeing from Tivoli, as I mentioned earlier, are around cost reduction, and not only just those sales plays, but obviously a very key part of the Tivoli business is asset management. And so during the call today, we kind of focused on software IT asset management, which is just a subset of that. But in weeks to come, what I intend to do is to help you kind of tie that into a larger overall message. And so look for that as well. As Sig mentioned, the sales play is out on extreme leverage. So you should have what you need to get started. And like I said, our contact information is there. So please let us know what we can do to help. And if there's no other questions, Brian, then I think we'll conclude the call today.
Okay, and actually we did get a couple questions pop in.
Okay, good, good. I was talking there hoping to give some time for people to give thought to that. So, okay.
Okay, first one is from Paul Richard. Your line is open.
Hey, guys.
Paul
Richard here, Automation Sales Northeast. I'm a little confused about the difference between the subcapacity licensing tool that's required by a customer if they sign a subcapacity agreement and this tool. And secondly, this tool's ability to do core counting and all that kind of stuff.
Those are two very good questions. Sig, do you want to lead with that?
Yep. The subcapacity reporting tool actually can feed the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for ZOS tool. The subcapacity tool is only for IBM software and only for the software that is subcapacity, you know, has subcapacity licensing terms.
All right, so let me stop you there for a second. So does that mean that in the catalog it's just IBM software but it's otherwise the same product?
No. Well, it's not. It's only IBM software, and it is only a subset of the IBM software that has subcapacity terms and conditions.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not.
So hopefully, possibly to help you understand that is when we offered when IBM offered subcapacity as a licensing option. Obviously, we had to have some way of putting some fence around that, and so we had a tool. Then with the acquisition of Isogon, which is where this product family came from, that code was even better code to use for that purpose. So we've used some of that code, but it's not an either or, and it's certainly not designed to be used in place of this product.
Yeah, the
let me the reason why I'm asking is we've just recently had a pretty significant change with respect to subcapacity licensing, right? So now apparently all or at least most of the Tivoli products are subcapacity available now, whereas before they weren't. So that means customers are going to have to sign the subcapacity agreement and do a deployment of the license manager product or whatever that the subcapacity tool is called.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go in there and I'm going to say to them, hey, I'd like for you to buy a license management tool. And they're going to say, well, I already have some amount of license management because I do it with the subcapacity tool. You see what I'm getting at?
I do see where you're getting at, and I can see where the customers would have the confusion. And Sig, I don't know how you want to help me clarify this, but the tool that you're referring to, it's frequently referred to as SCRT, subcapacity reporting tool. And when you're talking about subcapacity here, you're talking about subcapacity as it relates to the OTC products. I think it's when you know Tivoli OTC products that have just become offered subcapacity as opposed to our MLC products.
Distributed, yes, correct. Distributed. Thank you.
Right.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter, I guess to put it simply, if they're only interested in tracking the subcapacity for only IBM, then that tool works. But it doesn't work for the total IBM tool set. It doesn't work for the ISV tool set, which, as I kind of pointed out, there's around 56,000 catalog entries for ISV tools as well as IBM tools. All of our Z software is in there. It does go and track the processors that are allocated, by LPAR within the system. Otherwise, it couldn't, go back and say if the license has a MIPS entitlement or an MSU entitlement or even a IBM processor value unit entitlement. If it didn't have that sensitivity, it couldn't do a good job reporting there. So it does have that capability as well. So, someone just pinged me about LMT. LMT is only for distributed, by the way. If somebody's confusing part of the question, there's something called license metric tool, but the distributed TLCM tool is ISV based as well, and LMT doesn't track usage. So hopefully we're not confusing too many things in the same discussion. But
I think maybe we are. So bottom line is, if a customer, from my perspective, customer wants one solution across both distributed and mainframe, right?
Yeah.
That's generally speaking what they want, because they don't want to have to deploy two across the two platforms. And now you have one of these that they're going to have to deploy from a subcapacity perspective, and then another one that potentially we would sell them.
Well, they're going to, right, they're going to need an end-to-end, no matter what, I don't want to make this too complex. If they want an end-to-end software asset management solution that covers IBM software as well as ISV software, then they're going to license TLCM Z for all of that, and they will still, for subcapacity, because TLCMZ actually inputs from the subcapacity reporting tool, will have that install as well, but we'll pull the information in and generate the reports that are required. On the distributed side, they would go with Tivoli License Compliance Manager, and it doesn't have any extension, so I guess since it doesn't say Z, it says all other. And that product versus the that would do the same thing as the LMT product, which is the free IBM product, which is only for IBM software and only reports on deployment but not usage. But if they want to also manage their ISV software or other vendor software, they would, you know, install or procure TLCM for that distributed environment. It would be two different products because you can't effectively
track. Can one replace the other? Can TLCM replace?
No. You need a Z product and you need the distributed product.
What about the distributed subcapacity tool and our distributed tool, the license management tool, right? There's two different ones.
They don't. Well, yes, on the distributed side, you don't need to install LMT. TLCM distributed replaces it.
Okay, so if a customer signs a subcapacity agreement, they do a deployment of that subcapacity tool, I can upsell them to TLCM distributed.
Yes.
Okay, and then they'll essentially remove the other subcapacity tool. They
right.
won't need it anymore.
Yes.
That's a good play.
Yeah.
Because more and more people now are interested in subcapacity. We get them to deploy the subcapacity tool, excuse me, and now we have an upsell for the full license manager product, which makes it easier.
I would advise you, and this was kind of focused on the Z platform, I would advise you that as you're into subcapacity negotiations on distributed, don't even bother. I mean, you can tell them they can do LMT, but I would say that they I would tell them to, you know, I would present TLCM distributed at the same time. I have a single chart. If you want to send me an email, I'll send it to you that outlines what this tool, or, you know, what our distributed versus the license management tool do, and, you know, you'll see the benefits clearly there.
Is that Sig speaking?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll drop you a quick note, Sig.
Okay.
All right, that's enough. I don't want to hijack the call. Thanks for your help,
okay.
guys.
Yeah, that was good discussion.
Okay, I have a question from Alex Rivera. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Alex, and hey, Sig, you made a comment of go after any customer that's got a decent sized mainframe investment. Can you just expand a little bit on that? I cover general business, so that means different things to different people. So, you know, can you translate that to my world as to who needs this and who doesn't need this?
Well, unfortunately, you caught me at a bit of a disadvantage. I'm not really sure if I can give you an MSU number. John, I don't know if you want to talk about it as to what size machine this would apply to.
Actually, for this particular product, and I will go so far as to say for, you know, and I'm talking primarily the Z platform here, some of our products, the benefit that you get from them, tend to be on the larger size in terms of number of MSUs because of implementation effort or resource consumption or whatever. So I get that. You know, even though everybody drives benefit, sometimes the ROI is a little easier the larger the mainframe, the larger the number of MSUs. However, on this product, we have customers at all ends of the spectrum because it's really talking about what you're really doing is what you're tracking here is software usage and cost avoidance. And sometimes the smaller, lower end of the MSU, the general business type accounts, this is you know, maybe it represents a larger percentage of their overall IT budget. The pain is a little stronger, and so sometimes we've seen in those smaller, you know, general business, smaller number of MSUs, sometimes the ROI is actually better. I don't actually have an MSU range for you I have it. I just, you know, I could probably pull that. I just don't have it at my fingertips right now.
Yeah,
I can tell you it's not a product that we would sell exclusively to large multi-site, you know, global type customers with large Z platform that expands the globe. We have smaller customers that certainly drive benefit from it.
Yeah, the point that I've just been pinged by an associate of mine also talks about, it's more about number of vendors and how much ISV software that they're using, as opposed to the size of the machine.
For instance, we have a number of state agencies. So you don't really think of state agencies so much as, you know, at the higher end of the MSU spectrum, but a lot of state agencies that rely heavily on this product and get the benefit of it. You understand why the various agencies that license software and do bids and whatever, and there's software out there in use, they need to be able to have a view into that. So
yeah, I would not underestimate the compliance part of this, you know, or, you know, the pre-audit capability that has the information available in case, you know, a vendor is going to pull an audit on them.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand what you're saying, Sigurd, is it a valid question to ask them how many mainframe software vendors do you deal with?
Yeah, I think that's that one. And do you have a lot of software? And do you have problems tracking it? And whether you're really using it?
Okay, and back to your point of an audit. Is that something, just help me understand, you know, because in distributed world, Microsoft and IBM and Oracle, they do it all the time. In the mainframe world, does BMC naturally just do ad hoc audits? And
yep.
Do they do that as well in mainframe world?
Yep, they do. I mean, it means big dollars to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when those customers get the call from BMC or CA, you know, they need to be prepared. They need to put themselves in an advantage from a negotiation standpoint, and that's one of the benefits of this tool. It helps them proactively plan for when they're going to get that call for that audit. Sig mentioned another good point about when you ask the question of, you know, should you ask how many vendors they have, you know, software license from. Too, but the other thing you want to know too is having that view into who's actually using what's out there. I can remember a few years ago it actually was a small account. It was in Alabama. I'm not going to say the name of the account, but it was a small, definitely what we called SMB back then, and we were doing some analysis on actually replacing an ISV and with IBM software, and there were a couple of these kind of different type products. IBM actually didn't have a one-to-one replacement for it. The products were a little obsolete, and it wasn't something that was part of our strategy. We challenged the customer to go out and identify the people that were actually using that product so we could sit down and talk to them and have that discussion. And what came out of that is they couldn't find anyone who was using that product, yet it was a line item on their expense. They had been paying maintenance and upgrade charges on a product that they couldn't identify anybody as actually using it. This tool, you know, provides great value there.
Yeah, one of the other things that's it's kind of interesting, because when we do the POC kind of work, one of the things we ask the customer is okay, we're going to go and deploy it on this system or this number of LPARs or whatever. We ask for an expectation list. What do you think's installed there? You know, so this is one of those things to refute to the tech services guy that says, I have this under control, I install everything with SMPE, and I got a spreadsheet that maps all this stuff. And it's very, very rare that we go out there and do, you know, install the product with the POC and find a, you know, greater than 60 to 70% match of what their expectation list is. It's usually, you know, much lower than, you know, and that, you know, I mean, adds to the credibility of the product and the challenge of trying to do this manually.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I have a question from Kevin Egan. Your line is open.
Yes, my question was along the lines of the POCs. Do we find clients come in and ask for a POC because they know that they're getting audited? Or it's similar to typically performance model. A lot of clients want a POC, and we don't do that one because once we do the POC, they get the data, then they don't go along and purchase the product. Do we run into that with this product as well?
I'm going to take a very cheap shot here, but unfortunately, too many of us lead with POCs, and in some product areas, it's very, very appropriate. I mean, you know, in a utility area, like, you know, I don't want to pick on TSM, but, you know, something that's a backup utility, installing it, a customer on their own and doing it makes a lot of sense. But too often, we volunteer the POC without the customer even asking for it. I mean, usually when, you know, when we get in brought in about this is because somebody has flunked an audit or another part of the business has flunked an audit and the CIO says, we're going to put, you know, when he's being asked by the audit department, he says, we're going to be putting something in place. But, you know, we use the POC if there's nothing else. You know, I don't want to say if all else fails, but if we have the conversation with them, with the customer about the product, we talk about them what their cost trends have been, and you know whether we can use industry terms from Gartner or use some assumptions to display the payback with the term or with the customer on it and indicate the payback on it rather than having to do the POC or even reference calls with the customer. But I think the behavior more often than not is saying we can do a POC.
Stay away from POCs is what you're telling us.
Pardon me?
Sounds like you're telling us to stay away from POCs.
Well, I'm not saying that stay away from it. It's an effective tool. It's just that it's, you know, I've been with IBM a long time, and I was with ISVs for a long time. One of the ISVs I was with was a company called Legion Corporation, which was a merger of Decane and Merino Systems. And the financial management products just don't, you know, lend themselves to great POCs, whereas Decane, you know, they had some products, you know, you'd send the tape, let the customer install it, and then they'd have a time bomb in 30 days that it'd blow up. And there are some sets of software that make sense to do that. It's just that, you know, it's not a universal cure.
Yeah, Sig brings up a good point. Sig and I, when I was doing his intro, the reason it was so easy for me to do is Sig and I have a long history of knowing each other, but I also worked at Legion. I was there when Decane and Merino merged to become Legion, and we're talking, you know, this is back in the, you know, the late 80s. But one of the culture clashes when that happened is Decane Systems, which had very tactical products that installed very easily on the mainframe, you ran them for 30 days, you derived some great benefit, and the sales strategy was hopefully get the lower level, the systems programmers or the performance people, whoever it was, get them so comfortable with that product that when you pulled the plug, they went kicking and screaming upward to their management chain for the money to buy the product. That was the sales strategy. Then we merged with Merino, which was focused in IT financial management, and it was like Sig says, it was a whole different approach, and you shouldn't lead with the 30-day trial or the POC. So I think what Sig's trying to say here isn't that we won't do POCs, but what's important is to actually develop a sales strategy, gather as much information as you can about the accounts, about their history of audits, what ISVs they have, you know, lines of business even, and then if a POC fits into that strategy, then by all means we'll do it. One other thing about a POC is we do have some restrictions when we do a POC because, quite frankly, a customer could ask for some type of a use of the software, get the information that they need, and this is the kind of product is once they have the information that they need at that point in time, it kind of is going to relieve their pain, and they can ship the product back, and they don't need to have the reason to buy it. So we have a very formalized process for a POC. It's not that we won't do it, but you don't want to lead with it, I guess, is what Sig's trying to say.
Thank you, Sig. Thank you, John.
Sure. Kevin.
Okay, I have one more question. James Martin, your line is open.
Hey, Sig, can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Yeah, I have a few questions here. Back to the original question, I just want to clarify a couple things to start with. You mentioned the subcapacity reporting tool, the SCRT, and the Lightman's metric tool. Are those one and the same, or are those different tools?
They are different tools. The license metric tool is for distributed. When on the Z platform, if you say you're going to use subcapacity licensing, you know, there is this tool that you're required to do and provide reporting back to IBM, or I don't know if you have to provide it anymore or whether they just make it auditable. IBM has done the same thing on the distributed side. They have a tool called IBM License Measurement Tool, and it, when you want to do subcapacity pricing or, you know, use virtualization pricing is what they call it on the distributed platform, you're required to run that tool, deploy the infrastructure, deploy the agents, and run that tool and keep, and I forget the length of time, it's like 2 or 3 years of reports for audit purposes. Initially, you had to send the reports in, and now I'm told that you just keep them, and when IBM or if IBM audits you, you have that period of time of reporting there. So it's two different tools, you know, just like the software on Z is part of an IPLA agreement, the software, and priced accordingly, the software on distributed is under Passport Advantage. So you can, maybe that's a good differentiator.
Okay, so SCRT is Z only, and the license metric tool LMT is distributed only?
Yes, it is.
And did you say earlier you could replace the license metric tool with the Sibley license compliance?
Yes.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, we do what it does and more.
Okay, so there's some statement in Passport Land that says that that tool could substitute for the LMT?
Yep.
Okay, all right. And the last question focuses really on effort, time and effort, because I've run into this challenge, and customers are trying to save cost on software. They're trying to save cost on people, too. I'm trying to get a rough idea of how much time and effort it takes to both implement and maintain these tools. That's where I've been getting pushback areas. Can you comment on that, how much time and effort? And I guess the last question is, and to John Meehan's point, could we use this software as part of a services effort and just get it done for the customer and pay part of the license for the software rather than having the customer have to do that on their own and
no.
Software as a service?
No. Some customers try to, the tool, it's like any other software tool. There's not a one-time only cost savings. I mean, there's a big hit up front, but it's a continuous cost savings, and we have not done this as software as a service, not offered it. And I guess we're all in the software business, so we've avoided doing that as well. But it's not a one-time effort, because as soon as you pull the tool out, things start to become out of date. Now, on the implementation, there is some time it takes to implement it. Most of it is getting your contract or your entitlement terms into it. But after the upfront effort, it's more of a process, that the procurement people go through as they acquire new software and discontinue software. But, all of the reporting and the accumulation of data is really all pretty much automated and hands-free. So you'll find over the long term you're spending a lot less effort than if you're either trying to do it manually or if you get audited and get hit with a fairly significant bill.
Okay. So would you say like a half FTE for ongoing or?
On the Z platform, I would say that's probably true. I mean, it all depends on how big. Again, you get into this bigness kind of thing on the distributed environment and how dynamic that is. But on the Z, a half TE, if that, is probably accurate.
Okay. Thanks, Sig.
This time I have no further questions.
Okay. Well, we are at the top of the hour, but I didn't want the time limitation to be a reason if somebody's got a question and we just didn't have the time to get to it. please reach out to Sig or myself. We've had a lot of good discussion this morning around obviously some questions that folks had, and that's good. That's always a good sign when we have these calls and we get this kind of interaction. So, if you think of a question later on, by all means, we're here to help you. So let us know. So on that note, Brian, I guess I will conclude the call. I want to thank everybody for your participation this morning, and good selling.
Bye.
Okay, thank you. That does conclude the call for today. You may disconnect your phone lines at this time.